and how should one think of Bezier Kafka's research from this local GPT lambda's point of view in particular?
But so nothing global. Just
no, I mean, the question is kind of local, but I think it would be good for people if you sort of explain how that's related to global research.
But so I still understand the first part of the question. Can you just
yes. How does Bezier Kafka
but it's local.
Yes.
Yes. And then there's maybe a second question, which is how does global geometric measurements work? So possibly a global verified geometric measurements. How would that? Okay. So I can take those as two different questions and
yes.
Then one separate.
Yes.
Okay, so the first question was, how does Bezier Kafka's work fit into this? So let me maybe start with the simpler question, which is, how does geometric Satake fit into this? So relation to geometric Satake. Okay, so this is kind of question zero. So the so the answer is the following. So I'm going to say it in a slightly abstract way. So these kinds of results, you can take it slightly a posteriori, or you can take it however you will, but things like that tend to reflect further compatibilities of local geometric wavelengths, maybe beyond what I already said. So here's one example of that. So here you could say sheaves of categories over the space of local systems. Okay, so we're expecting to have some kind of equivalence like this. And now here's a compatibility. So the compatibility says here that you take the functor C goes to C G of L. The DG categories, and well, that's some functor. You take sort of spherical vectors inside of your category, and I guess in a sense, this is exactly the point about the global version of this kind of construction would be like passing from representations to. It's like what am I trying to say? Okay. You should think of this as a kind of reduction. This makes the category simpler. Loses a lot of information, but you expect this to be a simpler kind of thing. And it's kind of the difference between working with automorphic representations and automorphic functions, or sort of automorphic representations and sort of Hecke eigensheaves. So Hecke eigensheaves will kind of typically represent objects in here in a globalized context.
Is this the same as taking Holmes with the models on the Fagas Banyan?
Yes. Yep. Okay, so what does this function correspond to on the Langlands dual side? So the answer is going to be you take global sections of local systems, not on the puncture disk, but on the disk. So this is a copy of point mod G check with coefficients in sort of your C check. Maybe say that the equivalence matches up C with C check. And what's supposed to happen is that this diagram commutes. And there's a version of this for arbitrary level, so instead here you would just have G check of O invariants, and it would be kind of completely symmetric.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
So physically we are taking Holmes with the trivial surface defect. Just for physical translation. The modulus on the Fagas-Banyan is the boundary for the theoretical put final circle, which corresponds to a cigar with no surface defects or anything else. And indeed, you see the disk.
So, Then you can take endomorphisms of the functors.
Which all means lines on the trivial surface defect. Which means bulk lines for the four-dimensional theory.
And that is going to give you, so, you know, for this top functor, this is giving you some kind of spherical Hecke category, so E modules on curve G, whatever G of O of the variant. So this is the kind of thing that occurs in the geometric Satake theorem. And let me call this maybe spherical Hecke category. And on the other hand, what this is going to give you, like this operation, if you just sort of learn how these things work, is you're going to get some kind of, again, convolution algebra. In this case, it will be this copy of point mod G check stack times point mod G check. So we think about these as trivial local systems, not trivialized, but trivial. On local systems for G-check on the puncture disk. Apologies for slightly changing notation, but the discussion section. And these two categories turn out not to be quite equivalent, and it has to do with these temperedness issues. So there's instead a theorem, which is that this first category, this H-spherical, is equivalent to int co with some we'll put a singular support of the same point mod G check times point mod check. And here, because we don't really need to work, like everything in this fiber product is really taking place in the world of connections with at worst a pole of order one, you can work with G check mod G check here. And this is the appropriate version of like a derived geometric Satake. So, so if you here work with, if you're like just a normal human being, you look at this fiber product and you're like point times point inside of some space, that's definitely a point. So this is going to look like just point mod G check to you. And in that case, what you're getting is the category of representations of the group G check. If you're, but the way in which I mean this is not the normal way. I'm including tors in the fiber product. And so that changes the derived category, but not the abelian category.
So inside here, there is the identity.
Yes.
Right? Endomorphisms of the identity have to do with the support of nilpotent support.
They have to do with the appearance of nilpotent singular support.
Right. Because they're supposed to be local operators in the bug for the theory.
Can you say one more time?
Sure. So if you look at, so these are lines in bulk lines. Uh-huh. If you look at the trivial line, endomorphisms of the trivial line are going to be local operators for the theory.
Okay, yes.
Which are this field sigma that we, they're Gauge invariant polynomials of this field sigma plus fermions, perhaps.
Okay. So who do you see them as? So here's what it, what they appear. Here's what they are from this picture.
Yes.
This is just equivariant cohomology of G.
That's right.
That's what you see.
Yes.
Okay.
Good. That's right. This sigma is an equivariant parameter.
What's the relation between this compatibility and the one that you
lost? None. I can put this in its natural home in a little bit.
Are these symmetric monoidal categories?
No. Well, okay, actually, yes. Sorry.
No, let's be careful. So they have the following structure. So they are monoidal.
Yes.
And also they have fusion.
In I should have said fusion, right?
In a compatible way. So this is what we call E3. So like there is E2 structure, which is fusion, and compatible E1 structure, but they're definitely not symmetric. the E3, but they fail to be E4.
So E3 means moving around points in three space?
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's obviously what we get here from line operators in four directions.
Yes. But mathematically, you can prove that the structure does not extend to E4. It should not. There's no reason for it to extend, and it does not. So they're kind of E3 as commutative as they get.
Like we define a brilliant asymmetric way by saying there are endomorphisms of a trivial surface defect.
Yes.
A trivial line at the trivial.
But more generally, you consider line operators with sigma and circle in it?
Because those are the morphisms for these line operators.
The structure Dennis is talking about is, in a sense, not coarse, but it's very natural for this setup. So for any sort of mathematical setup that looked similar to this, line operators or whatever, you would end up with the same amount of structure. I don't know if that was exactly what you were trying to get at, but I think the same structural reasons are giving you the same same kinds of structures.
Actually, I was groping towards something slightly different. Well, maybe you should continue with this point times point over G, if you're going to say more about it.
I will.
You want? Dennis, I think at breakfast, told me that point that you get representations not just of G but also of a fermion of cohomological degree one and the adjoint representation.
That's exactly that. So it's just the order of. So I wrote point times point over G mod G.
Yeah.
He wrote point mod G times point mod G over G mod G. It's exactly the same thing. It's just the order of fiber product and quotient.
Well, partly because I can't see it that well. Right? I assumed it was the same thing.
It's exact same thing.
But this kind of thing is fermions.
But what problem is it solving? Is it telling you how to move slightly the position of the line operator? There's points. Well, you're applying this Wilson functor or whatever at a point, or a curve has a local system, and you have Wilson and Hecke functors at that point. You could move the point slightly. This might be more question for what Dennis was telling you than for what you're saying right now.
So, let me say out loud what I said over breakfast.
Yes.
Again, I don't know the physical interpretation. I know what it does mathematically, but it has it's a global consequence of this. So what I said is the following: is that what I said was literally this. Let me just write the blackboard. So it's basically going back to Dina's lecture. So D1 on which we have this Hecke functors acting at points. And what Dima explained in his talk is that all these Hecke functors combine to something global. And this is the action we consider quasi-coherent sheaves on log sys G check. And this category acts on this. This action is just assembled from this local Hecke actions.
I must say, assembling that seems unnatural. Well, the local Hecke actions have to do with the action of lots of special quasi-coherent sheaves over log sys.
Let me tell you how they assemble.
Yes.
So all of these actions factor through this action in the following way. So pick a point or several points of the curve. So then if you have a point, you have this evaluation map from log sys g-check to, let me call it points from G-check. Then
okay.
Take a local system and see what it does at the point. So combined, corresponding to this map, there's a pullback map of quasi-coherent sheaves. So you have quasi-coherent sheaves on point mod G-check, which is the same as rep G-check. Then you get evaluation of X. So it's the evaluation of X. So and what you see is that by composing, this category acts on this. And these are the Wilson.
Well, it acts on that through each evaluation.
I think that was the question.
Yeah.
So this is the question was how you, why is this enough to get the entire action of quasi coherent category? And let me just, instead of, can I paraphrase?
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of answering, let me just say in what sense it's enough. So the point is that, of course, acting at any particular point or even at a finite collection of points is not enough. So, but we have this linear combination things where you can take a family of points or family of collection of points, something in x to the n, and integrate it using a d module on x to the n, or like a, maybe fixed representations and integrate with using a d module as a weight, as a coefficient. And then the claim is that, well, those are, you're still not going to get everything, but somehow by combining this maybe in some infinite way, you will be able to get any quasi-coherent shape. And that somehow the non-trivial part is that the, you really get an action, meaning that there's no, so this vanishing theorem is the claim that if no matter how you write a particular quasi-coherent shape, you'll get the same action.
Was that your question?
I don't know.
He's addressing the question I tried to ask, but
yeah,
I didn't, find the answer.
Yeah.
Not totally convinced about the answer.
Let me just repeat what Dima said, because it's an important point. So you can say, okay, look at any particular point, you get very few quasi-coherent sheaves in this way.
Yeah.
Take 2 points, you still get very few.
Yes.
But the claim is that if you take all points simultaneously, you get all of them. But these procedures are not linearly independent. So you can have point x1, x2, x3 getting the same thing, x3, x4.
That won't literally happen.
Not like this, but what will happen is that these categories basically integrate over the curve. It's a huge category that maps here, and what we say is a Verdier quotient. That's the technical term. But this Verdier quotient has a kernel. And the claim is that that kernel, when you make it act here, it acts trivially. Which exactly means that the action factors through this Verdier quotient is factored through this. That's the vanishing theorem. Okay, so that's the classical Satake picture. So here, we're using just rep G part. And what I was saying over breakfast is that if you look at this equivalence, what else does it buy you? So the claim is that in addition to the action of this, you have more structure. And that structure is, so the word for the structure is crystal of categories on this over locus. So
wait, what do you mean by that?
Modulo temperedness issues that I want to sweep them. So how should I say crystal of categories?
You have a category over the space of local systems, and it has a connection.
Yes, that's how I said it over breakfast. So let's think about the structure.
I don't understand it very concretely. All I understand is that on the B model side, or in other words, on the Locke's side,
the
quasi-coherent sheaf could be tensored with another one. So now, if you have the geometric line lens duality, doesn't it? Since quasi-coherent sheaves of Locke's can act on itself, if it's isomorphic.
Correct. If you believe geometric line lens, then you're not saying anything new. Because, I mean, if you believe geometric language, this is equivalent to this, more or less. Nothing else to say. But let's say we are one step before believing. And it's still interesting.
And so physically taking tensor product has to do with an interface between the theory and true copies of itself.
Yes.
Which is a diagonal sort of interface. And then I guess if then you put Neumann boundary conditions with some lines on top, one of these three legs, then for the other two legs, you just get a whistle knife. I mean, some whistle knives.
I think we're going to hear about a slight generalization.
Right, exactly. But if you put other things that are not Neumann with Wilson lines, forget other.
Well,
but I think what Dennis is saying also ties nicely with an earlier question. The earlier question was whether this upgraded derived version of Satake has anything to do with moving the point. And he's answering that it's not about moving the point, it's about moving the local system in the stack of local systems.
Okay, but
that this is the extra structure that gives this crystal thing, which is basically the connection.
But there isn't a connection on this moduli space of local systems. So why can you move the local system?
No, but the claim
is... So let's look at this structure and let's see what it binds us tautologically first. Yeah, I'll just repeat what Dima said.
So, in general, suppose you have a stack Y, which is this stack, and suppose you have a category, which is this stack, which is this category, and you have an action of quasi-co Y on this category. So let's see what tautologically, what this means tautologically. It means the following. But the following cool thing. It means that we have the possibility of defining families of Hecke eigenobjects. And what I mean is this. Okay, let me be algebra geometric for a second. I hope you can take it. And then I can try to. Suppose you have an affine scheme S that maps to your stack. I'm kind of using Grothendieck language of points. So this structure allows you to form the following thing. It allows you to form C quasi-co Y over quasi-co S. This is step A. This will be a category on which commutative algebra A acts. So basically, I can base change the C to any affine scheme that maps to my stack. So I can talk about families of objects of C parameterized by my affine, test affine scheme S. In particular, I can take S to be a point scheme in the resulting category is what's called the category of Hecke eigensheaves. So it's basically I'm giving a point and I'm saying what portion of this category C lives over a given point of Y. But I can have a point, not just physical point, but an S point, like I found this. Okay, so this is what this kind of structure buys. But now, this additional structure binds the following. It says, it's what Dima was saying, it's a crystal structure. And what it says is the following, that suppose you have two points that are infinitesimally close. So the result, so the claim is that if you have two points that are infinitesimally close, these two families will be identified. And what we say is that we call the C a sheaf of categories of Y, and this additional structure is we make this sheaf of categories a crystal of categories. So crystalline structure is exactly being able to identify fibers at infinitesimally closed points.
Why don't you just say, roughly speaking, that vector fields on Y act on C, and that this action should be compatible?
Yeah, you can also say.
Maybe if instead of vector fields you say infinitesimal motions, it will become an almost precise.
Yeah, if I pretend this was not a scheme of a stack, I would say that so this kind of structure would say that functions on this base act on Banchi. But now, in addition to functions, we also have vector fields acting.
Polyvector fields,
differential operators, if you wish.
And how do you interpret that?
If you have B model, I'm sure that. So this sounds like local operators in the B model, right?
Local operators in the B model are polyvector fields. That's how you...
So
we were only using the local operators that are defined in the bulk.
Right.
What will be
replaced? Well, I'm not sure that these operators must be there in the four-dimensional game theory. You take the fluid field and you can put the fact on the Riemann surface, you get the B model.
Yes.
Then this B model will have local operators which are polyvector fields on the target.
Yeah, I assume you're considering polyvector fields that are only defined locally. Because there was a local statement that vector fields act. So you don't care about whether the Vector field extends globally.
Local statement, yes.
I'm afraid my mind is filled with fog. I'm not going to help.
Okay, but that was question zero. That was, so all of this was preparation to answering Phil's question. And the trouble here was that, not trouble, but we saw this derived structure, and we're trying to explain what it buys you in addition to the usual satake. In answering Phil's question, we will not see derived stuff. It will be kind of actual meaty stuff.
On surface defects. And
yes, but
mapping.
Tame defects.
Right. Tame. And mapping them under as duality.
Yes.
So now to answer Phil's first question about the Zhukovnikov theory. So let me say that there's some Iwahori subgroup. Formally, instead of
So we're discussing tame ramifications.
Yes.
Yes, or very, I don't know what the right word is.
Very tame.
Tame. Yes.
Gukovitan difference.
So here, I mean, they sort of look like matrices like F1, F2, G1, H2. So everything here is a Taylor series, and F1 of 0, and G1 of G2 of 0. So in this case, the claim, well, let me do it in the classical setting again, is that if you take G of K module categories, there's a functor of taking the Iwahori invariants. And over here, there's you're taking G of categories over boxes. And these two are supposed to be equivalent. And here, the functor is going to be taking global sections on n mod b, uncheck mod b check, with coefficients in sheaf categories. So here, n, okay, e, okay, everywhere e is a Borel subgroup, n is its radical, and so this indicates the Lie algebra. So here, what's the map to local systems? So you take n check, it maps to g check, and for some c and g check, I can give the connection d plus c over t dt. So it's just some kind of simple minded residue construction. And the fact is that this factors mod g check, and in particular factors mod n check here. And so,
Sam, you could have said, instead of this, you can set it more invariant. You could have said that these are local systems. These are local systems with respect to B. Now, with pole of order 1, such the residue is nilpotent.
Yes. No. I'm fixing the B structure.
Yeah, I'm saying local system with respect to B.
Oh, yeah.
Local system with respect to B.
Yeah. Or you could write it like, this is equal to local system with B check on the country this. And maybe this is this is exactly the kind of thing I want to make reference to in part two. But yes, like Dennis says, there's a kind of more scientific way to write this formula. And I can say that what this quantizes to also is that to say that equal order invariance match up to object invariance under quantum geometric problems. And so, okay, maybe I don't want to get completely drawn into what Bezier-Kovnikov theory says, but if you run this exact same algorithm with that commuting diagram, you'll get Bezier-Kovnikov's answer. So on the one hand, endomorphisms of...
The question was more about, what if I'm not required this nilpotent residue?
Yeah, so... yes, so that was going to be the next thing I was going to address. Yeah. But
so you can compute.
It's just to say, if you run the same algorithm, so first you take endomorphisms of both sides, so
yes.
Here you'll get the Hecke category, here you'll get some, you'll start with quasi-coherent shapes on some fiber product, and then you'll correct yourself and say, no, I should have incoherent shapes on some fiber product. And that's going to tell you, well, that's going to give you a theorem which was proved by Bezier-Kovnikov. In this crowd, as the thing his name is most firmly attached to. Then you can try to. Phil's question was. How does Bezier-Kovnikov's theory fit into this framework, and how should we think about it? So I answered the question, how does it fit into this framework? Let me now answer the question, how should we think about it? So I'm going to say something that maybe looks completely unrelated, but then I'll try to explain the relationship better. So let me be now in the general setting of quantum line lengths, for a second, just for no real reason. So there's a more general construction that you can perform, which would be invariance or maybe co-invariance for NFK itself. So no character. This is like the degenerate version of it's what Dima spoke about yesterday. It would be the zero Fourier coefficients in the case of GL2. And here you can do similarly n check of k invariance, and well, this diagram should commute maybe up to choices, or but
tuple.
What?
Tuple.
No, I know what I'm doing. And so, for example, let me do the kappa equals zero version of this. So in this case, what we expect is GFK mod with no level or with critical level is equivalent to sheaves of categories over local systems. And here we have this functor of NFK invariance. And note that this functor actually kind of upgrades. So there's going to be an action of the torus on NFK invariance. So it maps to T of k. Yeah, and I should have said, actually I should have put that up here. So this functor of n of k invariance maps to T of k modules at some level, which I'll just call kappa. T check of k modules, which I'll just call kappa check. And minus. And so this is sort of local geometric language for the torus. Which is a provable statement. And what that reduces to in this case And what you expect is really that this diagram commutes. And so here, what you're going to get is you can take sheaves of categories over local systems for to check on the functor disk. And we're expecting to get some functor to sheaves of categories over local systems for t-check on the functor disk. These two should be equivalent. And what this functor is going to be is going to be global sections on b-check coefficients in your category. Or you can think about it as sort of a pull-push along some along this correspondence.
What happens if you run the modules on the Fangraspania to this functor?
Yes, let me address that question with sort of what Dennis wanted me to say there. So then there's a general which is at every level, the category of Iwahori invariants can be recovered by this kind of construction, 2 prime. Category of Iwahori invariants can be recovered as C, N of K, and then you take T of O invariants. So let me not maybe get too drawn on why this is true, but it's not.
So physically, this is a statement that Kukovic and Ifex can be defined somehow by first abelianizing and then putting a trivial defect for the abelian theory.
Maybe. Phil keeps saying that you don't know what NFK invariants are, or Eisenstein theories, or something.
That has to have something to do with relating the non-abelian theory to the abelian theory, to the specific.
It's Eisenstein operation. It's Eisenstein.
It's specific. It's not obvious.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say this without Eisenstein.
I mean, I'm mostly confused what happens when you try to apply it to boundary conditions, but perhaps applying it to surface defects, it's simpler. Meaning, if you have a surface defect for the abelian theory, right, you should be able to induce the Vukovic defect for that, or wild ramified.
Yeah, so I guess then what I would say is, okay, on the one hand, you have this equivalence for the torus that you can just like write down, and you can manifestly see the compatibility that I wrote in question zero about T of O invariants. And then this statement, well, it's so kind of lovely, and it forces, in a way, Besser-Kopnikov theory on you. And in fact, because Iwahori is something smarter than G of O, it's smaller, so it contains more information, it even kind of forces question zero on you in the non-abelian case. If you believe if you believe two, and two prime is not even something that you need to be sort of religious about, then then question zero this compatibility is forced on you. So the moral is that...
Why isn't one enough for this?
One is enough for this, but one is not so different than zero, that's all. There's, you know, they're just like, oh, someone comes along and says, well, this is compatible with this. And you're like, why? I don't know, because there's a theorem that says that, you know, there's a theorem along these lines, and it can be interpreted in this way. But if you... if you haven't been introduced to this stuff before, if you haven't learned the theorems in the subject or done the calculations, and the thing is somewhat aesthetic, then the aesthetics of two might look nicer to you, and then it's to say that those basically force on you these other results. So, and it starts to look less like divination, even going back to Dima's talk. This kind of compatibility combined with the Whitaker and Katz-Moody sorts of compatibilities really are enough to pin down geometric Langlands in any context. Suitably understood.
how exactly do you see the arbitrary residue here?
How do you see arbitrary residue here?
Yeah.
You don't see arbitrary residue. All you see are connections that have a complete flag as a connection. So they're extensions of one-dimensional, successive extensions of one-dimensional representations.
So you can fix eigenvalues, but you cannot fix the Jordan form.
If you want to see arbitrary connections, that's what this thing about Whitaker versus Gatsmoody is telling you.
Maybe we didn't understand what you mean by it. Arbitrary.
I understood the question that you're considering the twisted version of Bezukhovnikov, where instead of nilpotent residue, you want to have a residue with different eigenvalues. Is this accurate? And that, I think, is what Sam is answering in some way. It's contained in what's written on the board, but it's not immediate to see this.
Right. Must be containing something, but I don't really see exactly kind of which part is.
Just to make sure.
Let me see if I understand. So what does this kind of look like concretely? So let me say G check is GL2. So these are going to be like Glucksys G check of the puncture disk in this case. It's going to be the set of connections of the form D plus some upper triangular matrix, like, I don't know, alpha, beta, gamma, 0, GT. Mod some gauge transformations, which are the same things as connections of the form of sigma 1 maps to sigma 2, maps to E, maps to sigma 2, and extension. So Bezukhovnikov theory is covering the case when sigma 1 and sigma 2 are both trivial. But this covers the general case. Was that what your question was getting at? So it's treating arbitrary extensions of rank 1 connections as opposed to extensions of trivial rank 1 connections.
Do alpha, beta, and gamma have simple poles or poles of all orders?
They're allowed to have arbitrary poles of all orders here, which is a dark world.
Phil, so when you said arbitrary residues, you mean toric residues are arbitrary?
No, I was just thinking of like the regular pole with arbitrary residue.
You want a regular pole arbitrary residue?
Yeah.
Upper triangular? Or what?
Arbitrary residue.
Phil's thought of pole.
So that's...
Yeah.
Okay, that's a separate question that has less to do with Bezukhovnikov theory, so...
Care if it's a theorem or almost theorem?
It is fun.
You take twisted invariants and they were hoary, and you take on the other side you have.
Your extra twisting parameters.
Would be toric eigenvalues.
Right.
Yes. But so that can be answered. I think Phil wanted even more general than that.
I think he wanted more and less general. So he doesn't care about arbitrary order of poles. So what Dima is saying is a connection of that form, well, you can put it into a Borel. Like if you have an element of the Lie algebra, it preserves some complete flag. So choose such a structure and this will give you some kind of algorithm. Let me give an alternative answer. So that has nothing to do with this, almost nothing to do with this discussion so far. So we could have started back at the beginning, and let's remember the major thing we know is that you can take G of K modules. This is supposed to be equivalent to sheaf of categories over Glucksys. And these both have functors here, so here you're taking kind of global sections over the space of local systems. And here you're taking Whitaker. And so your question is, what happens if I take local systems? If instead I take the functor of global sections of local systems with a pole of order at most one, regular singular local systems, with coefficients in some sheaf of categories. What does this match up to? And well, there's an answer, so question mark functor is going to be, let's do question mark of C is equal to C, okay, there's an algorithm, so you take the radical of Iwahori. It has some preferred non-degenerate character, like in the Whitaker setup. So sort of on all the EIs, it gives the value 1. That's the answer. So it's called baby Whitaker in some
oh. So maybe you should ask Edward and Sergey, so does it sound familiar to you?
Question actually about this part. So maybe it will help to answer whether it's familiar or not. So what happens if I take, say, minimal null pods on top of D4, SO8? So what
works? Minimal null pods on D4.
Yeah.
Why is that? So that's, okay. Any null pod element is already covered by the Bezier-Kronecker theory. There's some context for your question that I'm not seeing. What special things are you...
I mean, there are two contexts. First of all, it's not going to be of the type which can be induced from abelianization in any form. So this is something that abelianization would not help. That's one context related to the evidence comment. But another one is that, if I remember correctly, that on the dual side, it's something more interesting. So it will be dual to not necessarily potent.
So in this context, abelianization is being used to mean something like you take the Lie algebra, you take G tilde of it, it maps to the Borel, and then it maps further down to the torus. So this kind of correspondence is what's appearing in abelianization. So what, like for a nilpotent element, the abelianization is sort of zero. And Bezier-Kropnikov covers things where the abelianization is zero, so to say. So it's not about this fine classification of nilpotent orbits. It's about, it's to say all nilpotent, everything nilpotent is already covered by
Bezier-Kropnikov. Tim asked the question, so maybe we didn't quite process the question. Okay, can you ask the question again?
Well, I just wanted to know what happens for, say, minimal of SO8 or this...
I want to force you to ask more precisely. So when you say what happens, just tell me what you want to know.
Well, I wanted to know, for example, whether this fact or conjecture of MKTO plays a role. That's one aspect. Second aspect was what happens on the dual side. So there are two questions packaged in one.
So I guess there are two ways that one could answer your question. So you could also think about nilpotent orbits as giving... like sort of a value algebra kind of setup is, or what's it called, generalized norm or non-principal norm. So, and then the answer is no one really knows. What is generalized Whitaker correspond to?
So let me ask, the way I understood Sergey's question, and it's valid. So consider the following specific category on the B side. You're considering local systems for G-check with specific, so it'll be structure sheaf. It's with quasi-coherent sheaves in the following stack. There's a local system specifically with an nilpotent pole that lies in this minimal nilpotent form. Which B4?
D4.
D4.
D4. SO8. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So it's a very particular category.
Yes.
And so he's asking, what's the category on the other side?
Yes.
So the answer is that we don't know. And the reason we don't know is ignorance. We should have computed it, we didn't compute interesting particular cases.
Yes, but also the point is...
It's computable.
It's computable from Bezier-Kropnikov's theory. From Bezier-Kropnikov's theory, you can compute it.
But Dennis, what I'm trying to say is, I mean, the question seems designed to be... Should we say, what happens if you have a nilpotent element that doesn't, it's not like a, well,
yeah.
And the answer for the purposes of the question you were just answering is, It doesn't matter whether it's distinguished or not. It's the same. You're going to answer that systematically.
There is a prescription for Bezrukhovnikov theory, but...
Yes, but it's systematic across all nilpotent elements. There's another thing that you could try to do with nilpotent elements, which is construct interesting characters out of them. And that's, and for instance, that's the kind of thing that people do with non-principled elements.
He was not asking that. He was just...
He wasn't asking that, but maybe it was the question he wanted to ask.
So
it's
I gave you very specific, interesting nilpotent element. For example, for us, there would be a difference between, say, Richardson-type conjugacy classes and corresponding nilpotent elements and the ones which I mentioned, which is not of that type.
Okay, so I think Dennis is saying there's nothing interesting about this element, and Sam is trying to guess what could be interesting about it.
Like, are you thinking about this nilpotent element with the word mom somehow attached to it?
No, I think what he's thinking about is the following. Suppose you ask what surface operators there are. So there's a large family of surface operators associated to Levy subgroups. And in the first paper that Sergey and I wrote on surface operators, we investigated those and described their dualities. And first of all, even if you only use the maximal torus, in other words, the minimal Levy, that surface operator is sufficient to understand ramified geometric Langlands with tame ramification for arbitrary conjugacy classes. So all the others are extra credit. I think that's likely to cause... The reason I'm explaining this is that I think there's likely to be a communications problem.
Yes.
Because Sergey is implicitly asking about things you don't need.
Yes.
Now, but before getting to what Sergey is asking about, let me say that as well as using... Even though the torus is enough to consider all conjugacy classes, we might have a conjugacy class that is more restricted. And we can study it in a different way using surface operators for different Levy. And we get another duality statement that's still true, at least in our world. As a more elementary example, suppose you're interested in representation theory. There's a Breleve-Bott theorem, and you can construct all representations by quantizing G mod B, but some representations you can get by quantizing G mod something else, if their highest weights are special. So there's an analog of that here. There's the generic one, which is analogous to G mod B, which you can use for all conjugacy classes. And you might be satisfied with that duality statement and think you don't need it anymore. But there's extra credit, which actually was in our first paper, where you can consider other Levies and have surface operators adapt. Okay, the relation is roughly the following. The generic one, you define for any generic to begin with conjugacy class, but as you vary the parameters so that the conjugacy class becomes special, it'll have a pole, roughly. It'll become singular. And roughly speaking, the residue of that singularity is another surface operator. So in our first paper, we studied those. I expect that everything you're saying about duality, to the extent we can make contact with it, is either just about the simplest surface operator or conceivably the more general ones in our first paper. Sergey's question is about things we ran into in the second paper. And I don't think there's anything you're saying that's likely to be related to that. So therefore, the reason I've interrupted is I thought misunderstanding was close to 100% likely.
Yes.
Yeah,
Dennis answered your question.
What did you say?
Dennis did answer the correct question. Yeah, exactly.
But I want to tell you something that came up in our second. So we could define more surface operators that were, in a sense, exceptional. And in general, we were not able to find their duals. So we found duals in many cases, but not in all cases. So a typical example is that if you take the group SOM, and you take a conjugate class, which is diagonal with a lot of ones and minus ones, there's a surface operator adapted to that monotremy. And you can't really get it. Of course, the conjugacy class you can get is a limit of something else. The surface operator you can't. So it's conceivable we had a dual for that one. But in general, if you consider exceptional things like this, we were not able to get a complete duality story. But regardless of what it is, I don't think it's anything you're trying to talk about. Maybe you'd be interested about it. Perhaps it would correspond to something interesting in your world, but I don't think it corresponds to anything you've been explaining. So, that's my interpretation of what's happening here.
So, one more time, so you consider a diagonal element?
Consider a diagonal element in
the B side.
Well, you have to remember that we can... The surface operator makes sense in the physical theory, so I don't have to tell you if I want to specialize it to the A model or the B model. So we attempted to understand duality for surface operators in general. And in the first paper, we considered the ones that were constructed in an obvious way, I would say. So the very most obvious ones is that you take a connection with a simple pole. So you know what I mean by simple. Okay. The thing is that this element of the group isn't, although you can find a connection with that monodromy, it's not convenient to do that. Because any connection, if you actually pick a connection form that has that monodromy, the form will have less symmetry than the monodromy. So, because you have to have an exponential Lie algebra to go to a special place. So the exponential has more symmetry than the thing you exponentiate. So things like that we studied in the second paper and weren't able to get a full picture. The ones, the more generic ones, as I said, there was a nice picture in. Much of it mapped with things that were known in the math literature at that time. I wouldn't be surprised if it was mapped with much more that was discovered later.
It might not be algebraic, these special ones. Because if you're putting the main things about the monotomy, not the connection, they might be out of the allowed. the list of allowed words.
But there is something, I think, that this might actually be related to what I think Phil's question was. Because in Bezukhovnikov's interpretation, there's this implicit passage between connections and just elements in the Lie algebra, and that's okay near the Nilpotent connection. And that can be made okay near other points where the exponential map is morphism, but near special points where there are more symmetries in the group, and you have to say, you have to think more carefully. And so I think that that's.
Okay, so should I talk about local things also? All right.
There wasn't an explicit local solution, right?
In which paper?
In the second paper.
Well, if you want this monodromy with ones and minus ones, you could write a connection that has that monodromy, but it's very inconvenient.
Okay, so there was no definition which had that symmetry in the...
Well, there's no definition where the connection form has the symmetries of the monodromy. By the way, there are many variants. If you start worrying about exceptional surface operators, you discover more and more things you can conceivably do.
Well, in our world, what we say is, we say, take an arbitrary category,
yes,
over locuses on the punctured disk.
Yes.
Kind of in our world, an object of this category gives you a surface defect. And then for any such, you may seek a tool, which is a category acting on the loop group.
Of course, what we were studying was much more restricted than you said, because they were half BPS surface objects. So in our language, you're preserving one supersymmetry. We were studying surface operators with much more supersymmetry.
Oh.
And
can you explain what this means? Can I, in a way I can understand? No, because I mean, it may be very useful because we didn't know how to restrict our choice of categories. But maybe if you can translate this.
I'm not convinced you really do want to restrict them necessarily. Okay. Well, if I take the question literally, though, I can answer it. So, Hitchin's moduli space is hyperkähler. So it has a variety of complex and symplectic structures. You can look for brains that preserve more than one property, or likewise surface operators that preserve more than one property. So we were doing that. We were looking at surface operators that preserved a maximal amount of supersymmetry. Now, in general, you're not doing that. When you look at arbitrary coherent sheaves on locuses, they do not have any further properties except what was just stated. However, many of the important operations do come from things with more symmetry. For for example, this TFG, that's our version, of an abstract version of the universal kernel, does have much more supersymmetry. It occasionally causes confusions in our discussions, because the same physics construction can be specialized in more than one, because it has more symmetry, can be specialized in more than one way. So, like I was saying, to make a problem manageable, in the hopes it would be manageable, Sergey and I tried looking at surface operators that were half BPS, but we still weren't able to get a complete answer.
I'm slightly bothered by the semantics, because you were talking about coherent sheaves, and I'm talking about categories.
Well, I was only giving an example. No matter where it is in geometric language, as far as I can see, in our language, you always talk about things that respect one supersymmetry and not more. Often, important examples respect more supersymmetry. But you're always in a world where you don't require more supersymmetry. So when you talked about arbitrary categories with representation of the loop group, that wasn't attempting to restrict the
diagnosis.
Right.
Does that any more supersymmetry mean you can define it for all levels or something like
no.
that?
It means...
Or does it imply that you can...
I don't expect so. Well, maybe it would turn out that way, but a priori, no. A better model is that... a very simple example is that a local system, a coherent sheaf on Loxys supported at one point, has the property, since a point is holomorphic in every complex structure, that it's actually tri-holomorphic. If you think in terms of hypercalor structure, if you think it, as people who work on geometric lines mathematically don't, in terms of the hypercalor structure on the moduli space of flat bundles. So that's an illustration of what I said. The most important objects, such as the structure sheaf of a point on Loxys, often have extra supersymmetry. But your general statements always appear to concern arbitrary objects.
I thought it's closer to something that would make sense both in Betti world and in algebraic world.
But an arbitrary...
I don't think that that's it, actually, no. Because...
So we're talking about local system of the punctured disk, right?
You see category over the local system puncture disk, right? If I try to put physics words there, I would replace category to the theory, right? And over the local system, the puncture disk would be it to the theory, which can be coupled to the connection in the neighborhood of a point. Now, that to the theory typically is the logical twist of something with four supercharges. The more supersymmetric surface defects would use a theory which has more supersymmetry and it's coupled in a more supersymmetric way to the connection.
An example I didn't think of this morning. When the question came up of your derived version of Satake, so it involves more general lineup. Well, a possible interpretation is that it involves more general lineups than we're used to thinking of in this context. The fact of the matter is that the usual Wilson and Hooft operators that we discuss here are half BPS, which is a fact that we consider convenient, but which you don't use. And this interpretation of your question didn't occur to me when you asked it before, or when we discussed it half an hour ago. But a possible interpretation of your question is that we should look at line operators with less supersymmetry, and maybe they would lead naturally to an answer to your question.
It is a polyporter BPS.
What's that?
It's a polyporter BPS because operators cross symmetry by half by thinking about surface defects. And then you have lines
I don't know off the top of my head what quarter BPS line operators there are to you, by any chance.
No.
If it had a ghost number one fermion, then we would. You see? If there was a more general, a possible straightforward framework to answer your question would have been, if not requiring the line operator to have more supersymmetry, there would have been more line operators that matched what you're asking about.
When you say half BPS, are you thinking of abelian category?
I never think about categories. The answer to that question is no.
Sorry. I'll defer.
I still don't know what's a good way to think about, even for, you know, BBB, like, say, what's, how to recognize the BBB brains inside B brains abstractly. If somebody throws a category at me and says, this was B brains on an American article, how do I recognize which ones are BBB? The twist of space might be involved as some place in that question, but I don't know.
Well, the surface separator may be a little bit more familiar for that, because inserting surface separator at some point on Riemann surface wherever you do like lens is modifying our Hitchin moduli space, but it's modifying it in such a way that all of the structures that we had on a closed surface are preserved. So that's what we're trying. That's what this hub BPS really means. That we're preserving all this property.
I don't know, but a very large part of the structures you're preserving aren't actually considered
exactly
in standard mathematical approaches to geometric lattice. So your statement that all the structures are preserved won't be understandable, I don't think, to the mathematician.
Sure,
does it have to do with having a coherent sheaf on the space of local systems and also a coherent, like kind of an associated coherent sheaf on the space of like Higgs forms on the
something like that, yes. That's close, yes.
But
so
it should be close.
About it working for arbitrary kappa. Because that's how it's the twister structure is different.
That to me doesn't sound right. For each kappa, the same question arises. There's more structure you could preserve. It's not a question of varying kappa.
Yes, but
it's interesting. Because on the other hand,
no, I mean, that makes sense. Well, that structure makes sense about that. Kind of
definitely have to be a subject which only exists in a specific kappa.
It only exists
in finite conditions.
You can talk about it for every kappa. You would have some filtration object that lets you kind of
do it. For me, it was very puzzling in your second paper. So you considered certain irregular singularities. So it was not clear to me why you considered those and not
some. Oh, sorry. The paper you're now talking about is the one on wild ramification.
Yes.
What I was calling the second paper was a different paper that I wrote with Sergei that you probably aren't familiar with. We discussed exceptional surface operators.
Tame case. Yes.
Okay. But we can discuss wild ramification if you wish.
Yes. So it's not clear to me. So.
Why? Because there was a classical theorem saying that everything could be put in that form.
I wonder if they're worried about not. As not being there.
You mean lunch?
Lunch.
It's like half an hour wait for lunch.
Exactly.
Okay. First of all, I had to consider those because I was working with a hyperpalar world with more supersymmetry field, and the hyperpalar thing only existed for the situation I described. But secondly, there actually was a classical theorem showing that everything could be built up.
Yes.
One fact meant that could only be that, and the other fact said that it was sufficient.